From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 9th day of November, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. It's USDA Report Time. Coming up, we'll talk about the numbers as they were released at 11 a.m. Central Time by the United States Department of Agriculture with Greg Johnson. He's at TGM, Total Grain Marketing, from right here in Champaign, Illinois. A bit later in the program, we'll take up the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And along the way, we'll preview the Safer Ag Workshop that's happening right now on the University of Illinois campus, looking at autonomous vehicles, robotics, and artificial intelligence, or AI, as it's related to agriculture and occupational safety. It's an important topic going forward for the agricultural industry, and we'll cover it today and tomorrow during the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Time's running out to get yourself registered for the Farm Assets Conference. That's coming up in a couple of weeks, the Monday before Thanksgiving, the 21st day of November. And you can register still today at willag.org. Look for the Farm Assets Conference or go directly to farmassetsconference.com. The Farm Doc team and I are really happy to put forward this conference for you, and it is a really good lineup. We'll start by talking about the carbon markets in the morning with Sarah Sellers from the University of Illinois. We'll take a look at competition from Brazil and Argentina with Joanna Colucci, discuss supply and demand tables with Scott Irwin and Joe Jansen. Gary Schnitke will be here to take up crop budgets. We'll also take up the price of fertilizer with Josh Linville of StoneX, the price of farmland and farm policy. We'll have a fantastic day. You should be there as well. The cost is $80 if you pre-register by next Wednesday, the 16th. Make sure you do it today. Don't wait at farmassetsconference.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn in Chicago settled at $6.64, down $3. The March at $6.70, $3.25 lower. And May futures at $6.70 as well, down $0.75. January beans finished $5.50 higher at $14.52. The March at $14.57, up $4. And next year's November at $13.86, down $0.75. Bean meal futures at $4.17.60. $1.70 lower, in the bean oil at $75.54, up 51 cents. Wheat futures soft red, $1.65, down 21 1/4 for the December contract, and the hard red December at $9.30, down 15 3/4 cents for the day. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $151.57, $1.47 lower on the afternoon. Feeders at $179.65, down 25 cents, and lean hogs at $85.27, 30 cents lower for the day. Some of the outside markets at this hour: crude oil $85.83 a barrel, down $3.10. Diesel fuel or heating oil at $3.67, that's a dime lower for the day. And gasoline, 8 8/10 cents lower at $2.54 8/10 cents per gallon. Natural gas at $5.82 1/4, that's down 31.1 cents on this Wednesday afternoon. We're now joined by Greg Johnson. He is at TGM, Total Grain Marketing, from right here in Champaign County, to talk about the trade in Chicago, the reaction to this morning's, in particular, USDA, WASD, and crop production reports. There weren't a lot of changes, Greg, of note in the report. What did you find of most interest?
Well, the thing that I saw that was probably most interesting is they did not lower the corn export number. The trade had been talking about how we've been behind pace, and we still are behind pace on corn exports. And so the trade was expecting USDA to possibly, you know, raise the yield, but also lower the exports. And when they raised the yield but kept the exports unchanged, the overall carryout really didn't increase all that much. I guess that was the one surprise I saw, and the markets are responding, you know, pretty well to that. After an initial little sell-off lower, we're back. The market has come back and trading on the plus side. So I think that's probably the one biggest change I saw. I think we kind of expected with the better yields that we've heard in some areas that there was a possibility that the USDA would increase the yield, which they did. But the export number not getting reduced probably was the most surprising thing I saw this morning.
Yeah, so the numbers changed just a little bit for corn, as you said. The yield went up. It went up 0.4 of a bushel from 171.9 to 172.3 bushels to the acre. They increased feed and residual use by 25 million bushels. Total use then up 25 million. But when you put it all together, you still ended up with a $6.80 average cash price. Do you think that's correct?
I think that's a good place to be right now. I think the farmers are, gonna hold out a little bit and see if we can reach those higher prices. And I think USDA is probably right on. Given what we know about. The crop is still lower than last year's by far, even though it's not as bad as what we were fearful of a month or two ago. So I think USDA probably has that pegged pretty accurately as of right now, given what we know.
Yeah, USDA left the average cash price for soybeans at $14. They also raised the yield for soybeans up 0.4 of a bushel there as well. That's a much bigger jump from 49.8 bushel the acre to 50.2, lower than what was projected earlier in the year. But were you surprised that they increased the soybean yield?
Not really. They lowered it in prior months, and so I think maybe they got a little ahead of themselves. We are starting to, we did hear some better bean yields as we progressed through harvest. Not as surprising as the corn yields, but nevertheless, it probably should have been raised a half a bushel or so. I think the reason why the bean market is hanging in there and why USDA didn't change too much is there's concerns about foreign production, primarily Argentina at this point. They're off to a dry start, and it is a La Nina year, so there's a lot of unknown still about the South American crop, which is just getting planted. So I think for now the USDA just decided to keep everything about where it was, and they can always update those South American numbers in future months if conditions so warrant.
Should the market trend higher through the end of the year, sideways or lower, do you suppose?
Well, we've been selling off here with some harvest pressure in the last 3-4 weeks, so I think harvest is just about wound up in a lot of areas. Once that harvest pressure subsides, farmers find a place for this crop, I guess I expect a little bit of a post-harvest rally. Maybe not, a substantial rally, but, enough to see what it takes to shake loose farmer selling. So they're definitely not selling a lot at these levels. So I guess we'll see if, some kind of a modest rebound post-harvest will spur some farmer selling.
We know China can always be an issue. I'll not get into that today. However, I do want to talk one other item domestically, the railway, a potential strike still in the offing. Is there much concern in the industry that will take place now?
I think there's definitely concern. I think what the trade is at least hoping happens is now that we're past the election, that this won't be a political issue, so that if the railroads do in fact decide to strike, that Congress would step in, both Republicans and Democrats, and try to broker some kind of a deal, put some pressure on both sides so that we can come to a deal. We may see a strike for 1 or 2 days just to let them have their political say, but it would surprise me if Congress allows us to go on much more than a couple of days.
Hey, thank you much, Greg. We'll talk with you again tomorrow for Commodity Week.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM Total Grain Marketing. Today I'm on campus again here at an ag safety conference that's looking at autonomous vehicles and robotics and their use in agriculture and how farmers and others might interact with them safely in the future. It's something that needs probably to be talked about before they get to the farm, because otherwise we have issues. Jennifer Lincoln is here and Don Castillo. They are both with NIOSH. Thank you both for telling me a little bit about this conference and your participation in it. Can you first tell me what NIOSH is?
So NIOSH is the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. We're the federal agency that's responsible for conducting research to keep workers safe and well on the job.
That's Don Castillo, and Jennifer Lincoln is here as well. Jennifer, you put up for this conference, which really is about thinking about the occupational hazards here, things that researchers and the industry itself, which is also represented, and I believe maybe a few farmers in the audience, might need to think about. What are the things that need to be discussed?
Oh, sure. So the one of the tracks that we have at the workshop today and tomorrow is a research needs track. And the questions that I posed included three. One was, what are the most important occupational safety research needs that exist right now that we need to look at in the next 5 or 10 years? And the second question was, what data are available? Where do we find out information about the types of adverse outcomes that occur when someone is using these types of new technologies? And then the third question I posed, because there are so many people here from industry, is to ask what is the barrier to them to working with somebody in academia to do this type of research.
Those are questions that they'll try to take up during this track and then discover ways to move forward. On the farm, however, and in agriculture in general, adoption of new technologies can be very, very fast. The two of you made note that it does take time to get through this process. Again, farmers and others tend in agriculture to adopt things very quickly. How urgent is the occupational side of this?
Well, the occupational safety side is urgent because in order for that technology to be effective and to be for the farmer, needs to have the worker safe as well as, you know, help with productivity. There are so many research needs, but at the same time, there's some general guidance that we can use to keep workers safe. So there are risk assessment frameworks that people can use. There are safety checklists that people can use to make sure that as they begin to deploy this, they're thinking through what are the potential hazards and how can I control them.
One of the things that the two of you also mentioned was the idea that the end user, in this case the farmer, had to be really comfortable with the robot or the technology, one of the two. Now, for instance, farmers are already really comfortable with a lot of autonomous vehicle structure, meaning it's already built in. GPS units are in, the tractors do drive themselves with somebody in the cab. Is there fear that adoption could be so fast with already the industry producing vehicles, looking to produce vehicles very quickly, enhancing AI within them, that you'll not be able to stay up with this process?
So the advancing technology and being able to keep up with it in terms of knowledge on how to keep workers safe, in terms of regulations to ensure they're safe, there is concern about it being outpaced. There are issues of human trust, but there's also, it's important not just to be comfortable with the technology, but to understand its capabilities and its limitations. So one vein of research shows that sometimes people overestimate what the automation can do or underestimate it. And so it's really important for the farmer, for the worker, to know what exactly the capabilities are. And to, again, not overestimate that the robot's doing more thinking than it can do.
What's the difference between NIOSH and OSHA?
NIOSH and OSHA were created at the same time in 1970 with the Occupational Safety and Health Act. However, we were put specifically into two different parts of the U.S. government. NIOSH is a research organization. Our mission is to create new knowledge and to get it implemented into the workplace. And OSHA is an enforcement agency.
What are your hopes from this conference?
So my hopes are that this group of people, about 100 people, that they bring together their experiences, their perspectives, their information needs, and they help identify, you know, what our future steps are, what are things that we need to research, what are things that we need to consider. So I'm looking forward to this collective body of knowledge informing how we move forward together.
Thank you both so much. Don Castillo and Jennifer Lincoln are both with NIOSH. They're here at the Ag Safety Conference that's related to autonomous vehicles and robotics and looking forward on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana-Champaign. Wouldn't you love to kick off the farm meeting season at a great place like the iHotel in Urbana-Champaign on the University of Illinois campus? We've got a farm meeting for you, the Farm Assets Conference, the agricultural economist, the Farm Doc team from the U of I, along with the crop scientist, the brokers from WILLAG.org, and a couple of special guests, including Josh Linville from StoneX and Mary Kay Thatcher from Syngenta, will be on hand on the 21st day of November. That's the Monday prior to Thanksgiving, not very far away, and you can too. All you have to do is register today at farmassetsconference.com. That's farmassetsconference.com or willag.org. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hello, Drew. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday afternoon.
Yes, sir. A post-election day, but let's not go down that road.
No, we won't. However, let's talk about harvest weather in the United States to begin with. The last bit of the harvest has yet to come in, and producers would like to have some dry conditions. Depending on where they are, I suppose they may or may not be able to work over the next several days. What do you see?
Yeah, you know, I think the weather in the majority of the Midwest, the heart of the Midwest, is looking really good right now. I don't have any major issues in front of us. We're going to see a lot less precipitation than we're going to see in a lot of other places in the world. So that's a good thing. For the most part, we're going to have a drier bias playing out over the next 7 days in the heart of the Midwest. Now, there is a frontal system that's going to push across the Midwest. I believe this will be tomorrow in the Western Corn Belt, and in the Eastern Belt, it'll quickly push through on Friday. It's going to bring the temperatures down quite a bit. As you know, I think the rumors are already out there. The temperatures are in the 6 to 10 day period going to be way below normal. And so it's going to be kind of cold, but we don't get a tremendous amount of precipitation to come with this first frontal system, at least not through the weekend. Now, as we get into next week, looks like probably on Monday going into Tuesday, we will have an opportunity for a storm to move from southwest to northeast across parts of the region. This system is not being handled real well by some of the forecast models, but I do think there'll be something there that will disrupt some of the farming activity. Both rain and snow will be possible. The rain is going to be mostly the delta to the Mid-Atlantic region. The snow will be a little farther to the north into crop country, probably Iowa, maybe a small part of northern Missouri into the Great Lakes region will pick up a little bit of snow. It's not likely to be a big accumulating system. There's not a tremendous amount of moisture available in the atmosphere right this minute, or at least at that point in time. But with that said, a few inches of snow might accumulate. We could actually get a band of relatively significant snow maybe coming out of the Ozarks into a part of Illinois or Indiana. It's really just too far out in time right now for me to be comfortable with telling you how much snow might occur. I would prefer just to say that we're going to see rain and snow and have a little disruption to farming activity for a couple of days. This cold surge is not necessarily a trend that's going to be with us forever, but we've got probably a week to week and a half of cool weather that's going to be with us. As we go into the end of the second week of the forecast and out into the third week, we should be warming up again, and we'll be back into a warmer than usual mode. I think precipitation, the moisture that comes with this event next week is not going to be overwhelming. We're not going to do much to fix the river levels in general. And we're only going to temporarily moisten soil. So we'll probably pick up on, we'll say 2/10 to maybe 3/4 of an inch of rain. And there might be something a little bit greater, especially in the parts of the Delta and the Tennessee River Basin area.
Anything that we should be worried about or watching in the southern plains, I suppose, all the way up to the Canadian prairies?
Yeah, for hard red winter wheat country, we're still stuck in this La Nina mode. La Nina, by the way, is weakening. It's probably still too strong to make too much of an issue out of that trend, but we are at the beginning of a prolonged period of weakening. So maybe in December or January, we'll see some better opportunities for precipitation in hard red winter wheat country. I certainly see that coming up in the late winter and early spring. But for these next few weeks, it might be a little bit questionable as to how much moisture may occur. Certainly nothing in the pipeline in those areas for the next 5 to 7 days. And maybe even 7 to 10 days, actually, now that I think about it. The northern plains might be a little bit different. We've got a little mini blizzard that will likely occur here as we go forward through the day. Tomorrow, we'll see 6 to 12 inches of snow, some localized amounts, maybe getting upwards to 14 or 15 inches in North Dakota and northern Minnesota. It's a relatively small area, but it's going to be a nasty storm if you're in that particular region, 30 to 50 mile an hour wind gusts, and we're going to close a lot of roads and probably shut down an airport or two up that way.
And then staying in the United States, what worries do you have in the southeast?
Yes, we do have a tropical storm, Nicole, coming into Florida here tonight. That storm is going to bring moisture into the southeastern corner of the U.S. from Florida northward through Georgia into Virginia, maybe even West Virginia and part of southeastern Ohio, possibly. The storm isn't going to be a huge influence as far as, causing widespread flooding or anything quite like that. Florida will certainly see 2 to 6 inches of rain. But when you get into Georgia, the Carolinas, and areas northward to Ohio, we're probably looking at 1 to 2 inches of rain, maybe some pockets that could get 3 inches or more, perhaps. The storm's got a lot of wind with it, so there'll be a lot of wind speeds between 35 and 45 miles per hour throughout all of that area. Of course, Florida will feel a much stronger wind, maybe a little bit of a threat to some of the citrus and sugarcane that's produced in Florida. But when you get up into soybean country and peanuts and any other late season crop in the southeast, I don't think we're going to see too much impact. Cotton is probably most at risk. We'll probably see a little quality decline there. But I think most of the boll rot cotton in the southeast has been removed already. So most likely the cotton that gets strung out of bolls will not fall to the ground. And so we'll be able to still harvest that crop once we get into drier weather.
And finally, if you could take up crop conditions in South America and coming weather.
You betcha. It's been dry, in Argentina forever, it seems like. It's been a very long, dry year. They've had opportunities for rain periodically. They've actually had some rain, and the crops have been limping along. But as you know, there's been already a lot of production cut coming out of that country from a winter wheat and barley perspective. There's a lot of chatter out there about corn and sunseed not getting planted properly. Because there's no moisture, they're way behind on their planting progress. Well, there's rain coming up. It's supposed to start here tomorrow. It'll probably won't be all that significant until we get into perhaps Friday and on through the weekend into early next week. And most of Argentina will get rain at one time or another, and amounts will probably run 1 to 2 inches, be some locally greater amounts. A really nice event. Unfortunately, La Nina is still hanging around, and this is a fluke. We'll go back into drier, biased weather in the following week. In the meantime, it's been drying out in western and southern parts of Brazil, and they too will get involved with this rain. I expect that to probably take place as we go into the weekend and on into next week. Everybody will get rain at one time or another, and it'll still be a very good environment for the majority of the country. We are watching Mato Grosso and parts of Goiás. They still need greater volumes of rain, but so far they have not got to the point of being critically dry, but there is definitely a need for greater rain in both those states.
Hey, thank you much.
Have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. And right now at willag.org, you can sign up for the Farm Assets Conference. Don't forget to do that before next Wednesday.